Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Athletic.
Marc Márquez has been at the centre of every major MotoGP storyline since he burst onto the grid in 2013 and won the title at the first attempt. He's the greatest rider of the last decade. He became Valentino Rossi's final arch rival, and he continued to monopolise the headlines even through the past four injury-ravaged years, dominating the news from the sidelines and sometimes even from the gravel trap as everything went awry for him and Honda. So he's a pretty fascinating person to talk to, and it is an absolute privilege that we are able to bring you an exclusive one-on-one chat between Marc Márquez and our own Simon Patterson on this epically special episode of the Race MotoGP podcast. Now, we asked for you to send in questions that you wanted to put to Marc, listeners, and with the way Marc's schedule turned out ahead of the final test, we couldn't actually fit those into this particular chat, but massive thanks to Grassini. They've arranged for Marc to answer a few of your questions separately, and we're going to bring those to you in our next episode, which we're recording after the final test day on Tuesday. But for now, we bring you Marc Márquez in exclusive conversation with The Race about everything that led up to 2024 and his paddock-shaking Grassini-Ducati move. Enjoy it. It's a very special 15 minutes coming up.
Marc, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for taking some time out. It's good to be able to...
In the test, it's easier.
Yeah, so exactly. This is why I've been... I asked Chris, I think the day that you signed for the team, I told Chris I want an interview really early at the test when everything is more relaxed.
Of course.
So let's get into it. I'm going to jump straight in because I know we don't have a huge amount of time. Did you have to switch teams this season? Did you have to change to something that gave you more of a chance to win? After the last few years, after how difficult everything has been.
You mean 23 to 24?
23 to 24.
Yeah, of course, if I change team, it's because it was something that that I need. And yeah, it's true that, of course, it's a risky movement.
Of course.
But on the same time, it's a movement thinking on my career, not on the result in a short time, you know. Yeah. It's like thinking to feel like if I have the motivation, if I'm competitive again, and 3 years ago, 4 years ago, a very big injury, heart injury in the arm, yeah. And now it's working well, but still, it's not. I mean, it's an arm that you open four times.
Yes.
If you ask to a doctor, of course, it's performing in a good way, but it's not the same arm. But I have many question marks inside my head. So the best way to answer to myself is do what I want and it's a risky movement. Why? Because the comfortable movement was stay where I was with my people, with my friends, with a big salary and developing a project, and that's it. But I decided to jump to a new project, and at the moment we will see if I can answer many questions that I have.
It sounds like the reason you did it, the questions you have to answer are all for yourself. It's not for anyone else. It's not about...
No. It's just for me. It's just because for me, I say many times in my interviews, if I don't feel competitive. Competitive doesn't mean win or win. Yes. Means be on that top five, top six, and fight for podiums, fight for victories. Win a championship is super difficult, and especially it becomes more and more difficult when the years are passing and the youngers are coming. So the life is the life, and every athlete have his moment, and then step by step goes down. But I need to feel again competitive to continue with my career.
It feels crazy for me that, you know, I remember when you came into the championship and you were the young guy and everyone, and now somehow you've become one of the older ones. I can't even imagine how it feels for you that this has kind of happened overnight, I think.
Especially these last 4 years has been, has been a nightmare, but it's like passed super quick. The other years I was competing, in last 4 years, I compete the half of the championship. Because I had many injuries. So now I need to find this stability, this base, to start to create again a good base to fight for some races to the top positions. This is my intention. But to fight for the championship, this is something that still I'm not ready.
Those few years that you said that they went really fast, is part of that because in your mind they're just blanked out?
Can be.
I know
can
how
be
it is that, when you go through something like this and you...
It's true that in that 4 years are the years that I learned more things.
Okay.
But is another part of my mind say, okay, forget that 4 years because it has been a nightmare. So I didn't have even... I has been injured, but I didn't have... when you are winning and when you are just winning, training, home, events, then you have free time.
Yes.
When you are injured, looks like, now he will have more free time. It's opposite. It's less because you visit doctors, then rehabilitation, then you need to make like a double job to arrive in the level. So I didn't have any free time. And this was the first winter that I was calm. I was normal. I spent 5 days in Bali with my girlfriend. And it was like for 4 or 5 years that I didn't have any holidays. So I like it. And step by step, I start to feel again.
Through those 4 years, what was the toughest part? Because I'm sure there was parts when you thought, maybe this isn't coming back, maybe it's gone.
For me, the toughest part, is one thing is the injury. By himself. By myself, I try to work hard, and but the hardest point is that you don't have time. You see that the days are passing. And then you try to do faster that you feel, then arrive another crash, another injury.
Yes.
Then, but why you do faster that what you feel? If you are alone in a circuit, you will be step by step. But when you are here, all the all the journalists, all the focus, all the media is watching you. Yes. Then expectations are high. So for that reason, one of the things that I repeat more this winter is like, okay, the expectations are super high.
Yes.
But I don't want to hurt about expectations. I know which is my real moment. I know what I passed these last 4 years. And I know what I need to do. In my head, I know what I need to do if I want to feel competitive again. Then we will see if I can. Because, yes. As I say before, natural life, every athlete have his moment. Then natural life, every athlete start to drop step by step. But then you need to find a way to be longer and longer in your career.
You said that you learned a lot during all of this. Is there things that have made you better? Are there things that you're going to come back now with, like new skills, new, because of the experience?
No, I will be not better than before. Because maybe I have more experience, but before I was 100% on physical condition. Okay. And I was fresh and... I will be not... Yeah, the people say, no, he will come back stronger. When you have an injury, of course, it's injuries and injuries. When you have an injury like 2-3 years, you lose the rhythm, you lose many, the feeling sometimes, and then it's super difficult to rebuild all that things. But especially because your body, they say, no, the body is super smart, can adapt.
Yeah.
The body is super smart to adapt, to the new things, but also it's smart to remember what's going on
exactly.
There. So I will be different maybe, but not better.
When did you start thinking about this season and about making the change?
Of course, on that period, Germany, Assen, on summertime, I was in a very deep moment because again I broke my rib, the ankle, a ligament, and I had another injury. And in the first part of the season, in the winter I had one injury, then on the first race another one, and then on the middle of the championship another one. And then I say, okay, I need to change mentality. And I will be less risky on the track.
Yeah.
But then when we start on Silverstone, on Austria, the results never arrive.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I start to push again in Misano, India. Then I was again in the top positions, but again another big crashes. And then I step back. So was like, first I think on myself for try to change, but then when I changed myself, then I didn't feel competitive.
Yes.
So was there where I start to think more around Misano, India, is where I start to think a bit more deeply about the situation.
It's tough to stop pushing like that when you've spent your entire life pushing like that.
It's harder when you stop in the box and you are 20th. You push if you feel. It's yes. super hard to push a bike in the limit when you don't feel.
Yeah.
I can do. But it's hard because yes. When you crash, you have less confidence. So, but crashing is part of the racing. And even this year with Ducati, that looks like the people crash less, but in my style, I was always, even in my best years, I was the Honda that crashed more times.
Yeah, of course.
So can be, and it's high possibility that I will be the Ducati that crashed more times. But I hope that more in the free practice than in the races. But you never know. I mean, it's my style.
Was by the time you started to think like this, to think about the future, was Gresini the only option for you, or did you explore some other options? Was it the?
No, I mean, of course I had more options.
Yeah.
But I was looking for a 1 year option.
Yes.
Because I don't know which will be my future.
Yeah.
And I was looking for 1 year option, and another important point is that I take decision super late.
Yes. Yeah.
And the only team that was able to respect that timings and never push me, because I say, you cannot push me. If you push me, my reaction will be different. So I need my time.
Okay. Yeah.
And my priority is Honda, and was Honda. Mm-hmm. But then, first of all, I need my time, and the team that respect all these things was Gresini with Nadia and Carlo and Michele.
Looking at the situation at Honda now, it looks like the bike is improving a little bit, like they're maybe finally doing what you asked them to do, but too late.
I mean, what they did last 3 months is amazing.
Yeah.
And still I have a super good relationship with my mechanics.
Of course.
And with the team manager Alberto, and with Kubata-san, and with all the Japanese stuff. And what they did with 3 months is unbelievable. I mean, they changed completely a new engine. They changed a lot. I know that the reaction of the weight of the bike, and of course many different things that already I don't know, because they have his
outside.
Secrets.
Yeah.
And and it's the competition. It's like this. You can be very friendly with the people, but everybody have his secrets. But if somebody can do Honda, it's Honda.
Yes.
They need time. I don't know if they will need 6 months or 2 years.
Yeah.
But they will come back to the top as they did in the past.
So what does that mean for your future this season in terms of setting a target for next year? Can you take as much time, or take some time at least, to think about it?
Yeah, of course. For example, I remember on 16 or 17, on 19, my contract on February was already signed.
Yes.
and now even I didn't have any contact with nobody.
Yeah.
Why? Because first of all, I need to answer the questions to myself.
Yeah.
And then analyze the situation. But it's not secrets. If you are faster on the racetrack, you will have more options. If you are not fast enough in the racetrack, of course you can have options, but you will have less options. Then at the moment, first of all, I need to concentrate on myself. And then if I have the possibility, decide.
Yeah.
Because maybe I will not have any possibility to decide where I want to go.
Yeah.
So, at the moment, still I have a lot of job to do in myself.
And then looking to the season, just finally, it sounds like a successful season for you personally might not be what others think will be a successful season, because it's not going to be about finishing in a position in the championship or winning a certain amount of races. It's going to be about how you feel and where you are.
For me, successful on the season can be like achieve some podium, fight for some victory, fight for the championship, honestly speaking. Yes. I mean, guys, that is Bagnaia, Martin, Jackie, Binder, Acosta, that is coming, that he's a rookie, but I won in my rookie year, so yes. He can win in his rookie year. So are some guys that that are younger, are super fast, and especially Bagnaia Martin ride many years with this bike. They know exactly how to fix the problems. They know, I mean, I know which is this feeling because I was in Honda and my teammates arrived and I had the situation, everything under control. And also was one of the reasons why I was always the first Honda. When I was competing, just 2020, all the other years, I was always the first Honda in the championship. So this is a new challenge for me. But I need to learn. I need to learn from another guys now how to ride this this bike, because the way that I ride Honda is not working here. So, but will be super difficult to reach the level of them.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So thank you so much, Marc Márquez, for making that happen. Thank you to Grassini for facilitating it for us as well. And Simon, that was a really special 15 minutes, actually. I mean, obviously, you get a one-on-one with a multiple world champion. Your expectations are kind of simultaneously high, but also thinking, what can they say that they haven't said before? This guy has done so many media sessions across all these dramatic years of his career. Is this just going to be something where we go, great, we got him just to ourselves, but would he reveal anything new? But I thought that was a mega interview. He was properly open with you.
So traditionally, that's the case of all factory riders, but also traditionally with Marc Márquez, there's another thing where he's super good at media. He's super good at managing the media because it's all he's done his whole life. You know, he's been under the spotlight like no other rider for his entire career. So he's got very good at it. And what that often means is that whenever you throw him a question that's a bit difficult or a bit tough, it's almost like he's pre-recorded an answer in his head and he pushes the button on the soundboard to play the answer that he wants to give regardless of what the question is, and kind of misses the question a little bit. And there was none of that today. It genuinely felt like everything that I asked him, he kind of considered and gave an honest assessment of, an honest answer to, and came out really good from it. It was, you know, I've done countless number of debriefs with the guy. You know, I've been doing four of those a weekend for 20 races since 2016. Plus, we've done, you know, at least one proper sit-down one-on-one interview a year as part of that as well. But it's never felt like I've done anything as special as we did with him today. I'm delighted that we got the opportunity to do it. I'm glad that he was able to be so honest and open with it. And I'm really glad that we got to do it for the podcast as well, because normally when you do things like that, it's for print and you lose a little bit of that in the translation, just as a consequence of writing it down. But there was none of that today. It was just, it was something really special, something really different. Really, really, really pleased to be able to get the time with him and to get such good answers out of him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was thinking back during it to, I was trying to remember the point at which Márquez started talking more openly about how he might not be the same again after the injuries. And I feel like there's a point, there were so many injuries over the last 4 years, I lose track of what the juncture actually was, but there started being interviews where he was open to the possibility that his peak had now been wrecked by what had happened to him and he might not be the same rider again. And that had kind of quietened down a little bit, I felt, as kind of the move took precedence and all the questions were about leaving Honda, about joining Grassini, and what a Ducati would be like to ride. And he brought it back up himself in your chat today. I was very struck by him basically going, this isn't just about getting a more competitive bike. I need to see if I'm any good again or not. He's not quite going that far, but he's not taking it for granted that he is still the Marc Márquez of 2019.
No, I mean, he sounded like someone that has always had that question mark in the back of his head, even while the rest of us have forgotten about it with all the excitement of changing manufacturers and changing teams. And, you know, there's been a lot of Marc Márquez headlines in the last 6 months, apart from his injury recovery, because the focus has been elsewhere. But, you listen to him speak today, you listen to the way he raises this, and it's clear that the focus in his head is still on, you know, am I going to come back and be the guy that I used to be? And it actually sounds like he doesn't think he is going to be. Now, don't get me wrong, within Marc Márquez's talent range, there's so much talent that I think he can come back as a different rider and still be super competitive and still win races and titles. But, you know, it's the first time in a long time that I've sat down and thought, yeah, you know what, maybe maybe things are going to be different here. Maybe this isn't going to just be a case of super fast rider from 2019 gets in a different bike and is immediately super fast again.
There's almost this thinly veiled aura of annoyance, and annoyance not a hostile annoyance, but annoyance in the sense of you guys have not been there for what I have been, with Marc Márquez and the media's expectation. I'm very much including myself into that, not like as a prominent member, but certainly as having towed that line of just expecting that he'll be fine and super strong immediately on the Ducati, just from the evidence that we've seen even post-injury. And because I think we do take a little bit for granted, and I certainly do, that you can return and recover in motorsports more than anywhere, that injuries that maybe in other sports would be career transformational in terms of your peak ability, that in motorsport, yes, they'll take years out, months, years, whatever, but they won't take that peak level of performance. But certainly, I think it is pretty clear that Mark disagrees there. He did not say he was over the hill, but he certainly suggested very strongly that he was over the peak of his career, that he will not... I think he did strongly suggest that he will not be as good as the best version of himself once was, which is an interesting thing to hear from a rider who is only a few months older than me. Thanks for that, Mark. But again, it's not about age. It's about what we haven't been there for, except in, you know, in documentaries and press releases about surgeries and all that kind of thing. Obviously, it is physical, but it's also going to be mental. All that said, I mean, we also should not over-exaggerate here, because he's already quick on the Ducati. So it's just, again, it is a question of that peak performance, but it's not a question of being over the hill or done or not being a front runner anymore. He clearly is. He's just clearly quick enough on this bike that so many people are quick enough, and he is too. And he's so new to it. And we know it takes people at least a little bit to squeeze out what they can squeeze out of it. So it's interesting. It was a really interesting chat and a really interesting view, and I feel that push and pull between my expectations and also realizing the reality of his situation. It's insightful.
I think that the factor that he's considering as much as the injury is his age, and the fact that he's now, you know, 31 years old. You look at the sort of modern history of the sport, I think the only person that's won a title older than that was Mick Doohan at the end of an incredible run of form. You know, Valentino Rossi won his last title at 30. He is getting on in terms of this championship. And, you know, he talked about that, about suddenly being one of the old guys. But I think that there is, I don't know, maybe it's not even conscious on Mark's part, where he's not consciously downplaying his chances going into this year. But I think that maybe the rest of us looking at it from a different perspective can see that a still very good Marc Márquez, as opposed to an exceptional Marc Márquez on a current Ducati, is still going to be a package that's going to be right at the front this year, and that, you know, maybe he's downplaying that in his own mind for his own reasons, whatever, right now. But, you know, he's going to be super fast. We know he's going to be super fast. He's already proven that. And maybe his words are going to change as the season progresses in that regards. Maybe we're going to see him become a bit more confident in what he's saying about, you know, what is possible. But I think that there's less to fear maybe than he suggested in that regards.
There's a funny, you know, working in this industry for a bit now, obviously, Matt and Simon, you have, Matt certainly, I think Simon and I are actually fairly similar in terms of the time, but Matt certainly is
ancient,
a lot more experienced in it. But it's always, When you get to competitors who are older than the median age, what you usually expect to hear from them is a defiance of the age, you know, the Fernando Alonso of today, yeah. the Valentino Rossi, like, no, I still got it. I don't feel it. It's just a number. And then you get Marc Márquez, who turned 31 this week, being, yeah, you know, the best years are probably done, and I am keenly aware of every second that passes. It's like he's reading out the lyrics to Pink Floyd's Time every single time he speaks to the media, you know? Every year is getting shorter. It's interesting, and I think very telling, very revealing.
But also, would that have been there had the last 4 years not played out as they were?
No.
An injury-free Márquez who hadn't lost that time and was still, it still had an arm the same shape as it was 5 years ago, would not be saying that, I'm sure. But I think I didn't get the impression at any point during that interview like he was saying anything to play a mind game with the competition or trying to play down chances for, you know, to bewilder opponents or anything. I felt like that was an honest assessment of where he feels like he is at right now.
Can I say something? And this is not really related to Marquez. It's just a general belief of mine in terms of mind games. I think mind games is what we media members emphasize a lot when we want to feel important. Like we go, all the other riders are definitely reading what these people told us. And it's, you know, it occupies their brain. And that's part of it. But sometimes
I think that could be true if we accuse most riders of mind games, but like a Valentino Rossi or a Jorge Lorenzo, when they say something that's a mind game, they don't, I don't think they ever cared which reporter was writing it. They just wanted to get that little nugget in the opponent's head somehow. I suspect that, for instance, without wanting to be mean to this guy, if Lorenzo Savadori was playing mind games in the media, that we'd probably be hyping ourselves up a bit if we thought that was the case, but I'm thinking of the big guns on that front.
The least likely rider in this whole paddock to play mind games is Lorenzo Savadori. It really is.
A few other things that really stuck out as endearing, actually, in some cases. Mark joking, but probably not joking, that he'll still be the Ducati rider who crashes most this year, I thought was probably going to end up being bang on the money. Especially now Jorge Martin's tidied himself up a little bit compared to 2023, but let's see how that goes. It's interesting as well, because like we were talking about the plan for the interview earlier and what you were going to put into it, Simon, and it was deliberately looking back quite a lot. Even though we're now in 2024, and you could say that the whole leaving Honda, moving has been done, we all felt there was something else to dig into there, that there were bits that were worth looking back on. Now the dust has settled, the move's complete, bit of hindsight. And I'm really glad we did. I was surprised if the timeline he described is exactly as it was in terms of when he started seriously thinking about leaving. I'd be quite surprised if it was as exactly as he portrayed it. He was talking there, I think, about it kind of being India time almost when his thoughts were really serious and that the Saxon Ring mess had kind of put things in his mind. But at that point, it almost felt like he got to the Misano test before thinking seriously about leaving based on how he described it. That's, I don't know if I quite go along with that.
I mean, if that is the case, then you have to give a massive amount of credit to Gresini, because they've basically played a blinder by opening the door wide a couple of weeks before that and saying, look, we have the space for you here. Without ever really saying it outright, they opened a door. And if that, you know, if he hadn't been seriously thinking about it until we got to that point, until he got to that Misano, not even the Misano race, but the post-race test where he had the chance to try the new bike, if he got to there and was only then starting to think about it, then you would think if Gresini hadn't been quite, you know, open to the concept, then maybe that's where it would have ended and he'd be a Repsol Honda the rider this year, because he wouldn't have explored the possibility too much. You know, he kind of hinted that he didn't really go looking for alternatives. He sort of saw what was available, but he didn't hunt anything down. So, you know, we thought that Gresini played an absolute blinder in signing him. Maybe it's an even bigger move than we thought from them. You know, maybe they've really nailed that just by being open to the possibility and presenting him an opportunity that, you know, arguably, I don't think any rider would have expected to have had at that point in the season.
I should say, I do actually believe the timeline quite a bit, because I think that moment that he describes is when the joking stopped.
True.
Yeah.
I think while he was joking, he was still thinking that he was just playing a fun media game and he's going to stay at Honda. Just, you know, drew up a bit of media excitement and then just sticking around, but made a storyline out of it. And then suddenly it made sense. And oops, now you can't joke about it because it's not funny anymore because you're leaving.
And we talked about that at the time, right? We talked about the change in tone that came at that Misano test where he went from kind of feeling like he was playing with us to then not anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and yeah, maybe everything before that was, maybe he was considering it, but he was dipping his toe. But, you know, that does line up with the moment it became serious was whenever he jumped on that bike at Misano and realized that this isn't going to get better in the short term.
Well, the other thing with that as well is I was fascinated by how he described his decision-making process in terms of anyone who came at him aggressively with a demand or trying to rush his process was just like flat out no. Who might have done that? Any guesses as to?
Factory Ducati.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's aimed at Factory Ducati because he also references Gresini being the only people that wanted to give him a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, we know that Ducati offered him a 2-year deal. We know that, you know, we had that conversation in Motegi in October, early October, I think I remember the conversation coming out the first time that Gigi Deligna admitted that they'd made an approach. And then we realized that was a 2-year deal. That wasn't what he wanted. So I think that's who came at him aggressive. And that's, there's got to be a lesson there to the factory team about the Gresini approach and how maybe sometimes it's a little bit better to be hands off because they're the one that won at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I really admired the way he phrased that. And also that does fit the timeline if he's kind of thinking of India Japan time as being the serious moment and everything that I don't think for a moment there wasn't a part of his brain up to that point, certainly from Saxony onwards, just wondering what might be out there.
Of course.
But to go from that wondering to yes, this is serious, I would certainly agree on that timeline. And absolute fair play to him for going, I'm Marc Márquez, I'm gonna make my decision in my time, and yeah, you've burnt your bridge if you're waving a contract with a deadline on it, because that's not what I'm here for. The other thing from the interview that I really want to talk about is the future and Honda, because he was, yeah, we expected him to maintain a good relationship with Honda. We talked often about how he may end up back there. Simon, you've got the theory that he owes Honda a year. He was extremely warm towards Honda in that interview, and not just platitudes, extremely specific about Honda's chances of being competitive to a standard he'd accept again.
He sounds like someone that's been paid very close attention. The fact that he referenced still having lines of communication open to Kawata-san in particular, that to me is like he is paying very close attention to this.
Yeah.
And I spoke to all four Honda riders after the interview and, you know, sort of put what Mark said to them. And they were like, oh, so he's been paying very close attention to what's going on here then. Like, this is, you know, they're watching very closely. The Márquez camp, what's happening here? That to me, it doesn't it doesn't change my opinion at anything, but it kind of confirms my suspicions that the Marc Márquez Honda story, it isn't over. This is gonna, you know, and it might not come back together for 2025, but if we get to the start of the 2025 season, if we get to like 11 months down the line and Repsol are announced as the renewing their title sponsorship deal with the Honda team, then it's going to be a fairly big indicator that there's something coming in the near future, because yeah, he's going to finish his career in a Honda.
To be fair, I think it does. Like, this is not to suggest that, you know, oh, they've shaken hands or something, they've signed something, whatever, some decision's been made. But it does also sound like the timeline on what Mark will decide for 2025 is the kind of timeline that I think fits Honda more than any other manufacturer on the grid, if that makes sense. Honda is, I think, in the position to wait for the prodigal son to come back.
Yeah.
More than anyone else, really. Ducati doesn't need to wait.
Yeah.
Ducati can certainly, you know, explore the possibility, but Ducati has options on who to sign for its works bikes, and it will know that those works bikes will keep winning. KTM, I think, I suspect we have a good feeling of what the 25 lineup might be already, and I see how it might not include Marc Márquez, certainly. All right, what I'm trying to say is it feels like Brad Binder, Pedro Acosta makes the most sense to me in my head right now. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't know why I'm being vague about it.
And I think that is what Márquez would predict as well. We've talked before about how it might be mind games, how much he's hyping Pedro Acosta already. But I don't know, listening to him today and having seen Acosta's test performance as well, I was thinking, no, he's saying that very genuinely, in that he's looking at a guy who could not do what he did in 2013 in outright championship terms, because Acosta's on a Tech 3 Gas, not a Repsol Honda at its peak, but who could come in with that level of personal performance that I think he totally genuinely sees that from Acosta.
The thing for me about the Acosta comparison was how casually it was made.
Yeah.
it wasn't him trying to hype him up or play mind games. It was just like, oh yeah, no, of course he's going to be fast. He's going to do what I did.
Just a statement of fact, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of the Paddock opinion on things. Like, everyone's talking about that kid after the way the testing has started. But I think that... I think that Mark is more indicative of anyone else. And it's the first time that we've heard him really speaking about Acosta, and it's not felt like mind games, because there has been a little bit of that earlier in the year, or end of last season, where it kind of did feel like he was putting a bit of pressure on him. That wasn't today. Today was a lot more honest in his assessment, I think.
Yeah, just matter of fact. Yeah, this kid's quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is. I think pretty obviously. And there's still a million other ways that KTM rider situation can play out. And the same is true for the Ducati second bike, obviously. And the same is true for like guys like Aprilia. And well, okay, he's not going to Yamaha. We can cross that one out. But, you know, the rest of them. But it's Honda that makes the most sense timeline-wise in terms of, you know, the salary it can offer. Like, hey, we put all of your money that you forfeited for... you know, for tearing up the contract. We've put it all in a frozen bank account, basically. It's there waiting for you for your graduation day or whatever when you're coming back. It's very easy to paint that particular picture and to lay out all the steps to how it would happen, which is not to say that it's definitely going to happen in 25, but something about it makes too much intuitive sense. Borderline Occam's razor territory, you know? But it's the fun of MotoGP is that often doesn't work out the way we think it is, which is otherwise it'd be really, really boring if we could just see all the steps, how they will happen.
Otherwise, Marquez wouldn't be on the Gresini Ducati right now. Look at this. We've ended up on the 2025 rider market again. As what topic we start a podcast on, you know, this is where we're going
to
end up.
But it's been like, the you know, I've spoken to a lot of riders today and it's been... kind of pervasive. Everyone's already talking about it.
Yeah,
that is just, that's where we're at right now as a sport.
Yeah, no, I think rightly so. Like, thinking about Marquez's options, you're right. I think Honda is the most geared up to welcome Marquez back. There's too big a chess game at the others. I feel sorry for Aprilia, because I feel like Aprilia needs to get its star lined up pretty quickly to make sure it doesn't end up with that one, because it needs one. It needs a big name rider for the next era now. And it's a bit too vulnerable to what everyone else is going to do. But Honda's just there, like you say, going, got some cash, bike's getting better. You know, we'll shovel everyone else around however we need to make it happen for you. And you're still on the phone to us every day by the sound of it. Still got Santi here. He's waiting for you. Remember him? You know, it's all lined up. So,
and Santi's on the side of the guy who's under the one-year deal.
Yeah.
And Joan Mir. So Honda, you could argue, is in a position to where it can wait to see whether Mark's coming back or whether it recommits to Joan Mir. Now, that's a really harsh thing to say about Joan Mir, who currently looks like the fastest Honda rider. But if Honda can get Mark, I think any of its current lineup makes way immediately. And again, I want to reiterate my belief that the guys who are on multi-year contracts are safe. I don't think Honda is particularly interested in tearing up any contracts from its side. So if Mark comes back, for me, that's at the expense of Joan Mir.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's a storyline to watch in the opening races. And I'm sorry to be saying that, Joan, because I mean, he's lovely. He does not deserve to have this hanging over his head. But I think he also understands it very much, given the year he had last year and everything that's happened.
I can see a reality where Mir stays, but where he isn't a Repsol Honda rider. I can see a reality where he ends up at LCR alongside Johan Zarco, because I think they'll be keen to keep his experience within the project, especially if he's really pushing bike development this season. But they will do anything and everything to make room for Marc Marquez.
It could also be a straight swap with Rossini, honestly.
Oh, yeah, that could work out. Yeah, that could work out very well, couldn't it?
I don't think he'd say no to that, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, we've got Frankie Calcetti. Yeah, that could work. Anyway, let's not... hurry Marquez out of Gresini Ducati just yet, because I'm really excited to see how he goes at Gresini. Every time another test happens, every time another interview happens, I get more excited for this season. And in some ways, I'm even more excited if Marquez's assessment of himself in your interview there, Simon, is completely accurate. And he's coming back as like not the Marquez who's going to wipe the floor with everyone, but a Marquez with a massive point to prove to himself, who's up against Pecco Bagnaia, Jorge Martin, Pedro Acosta as well, maybe, in a very equal situation. I think that's going to be absolutely mega to watch. We have one more test coming up before things start for real. We'll be back with another episode straight after that test, which we'll record Tuesday night. I expect it might be Wednesday morning European time before it reaches you, because it'll be an evening record on Tuesday. Thank you for your time, listeners. Thank you so much, Grassini, for making that interview happen. Thank you, Mark Marquez, for your time as well. Listeners who put questions in, like I said at the start, a few of you are getting your questions put to Mark Marquez. That will appear in the post-Qatar test episode in the middle of this week. So keep an ear out for that. And we'll be back with everything you need to know about the final test of the 2024 preseason in just a couple of days.
The Athletic.